Welcome to the Innovation Podcast Series, hosted by me, Martin Lucas, with our subject matter expert and innovation catalyst, Andrew Vorster. Andrew delivers keynote talks all around the world, has worked for FTSE companies, and we will be mining the gold nuggets from his brain. Andrew, I love a little bit of myth-busting, so let's take on innovation, right? I hear this concept of people talking about innovation funnels and implementing innovation processes. And if you listen to all the consultants enough or spend 15 minutes on LinkedIn, it seems really easy, right? So what's the truth of the matter?
Yeah, the funnel. I've just got this aversion to this whole concept of a funnel.
Okay.
Lots of people say, oh, we do innovation. No, we've got this innovation funnel. And, you know, they will show you this sort of horizontal funnel that shows ideas go in one end, and then there's these gates called stage gates where they make decisions, and then things pop out the other end, you know, innovative things, products, services, this kind of thing. Well, I'm sorry, but that's a really lousy metaphor, a funnel. Because if you think of it, let's say you wanted to use a funnel to pour water from one container to another, right? So you use the funnel, you'd be really disappointed if things started leaking out the side. You would expect everything you put out in the top to come out the bottom. And not all your ideas are going to make it all the way through. They naturally are going to have to be selected along the way. So it's more like a sprinkler than a funnel in the first place. And you don't force everything from the top coming out the bottom. And so funnels are a really, really lousy metaphor. And they're lousy for a whole host of reasons. Because when you think, and taking their funnel metaphor further, you know, when something comes out of the funnel, a gate, it's fallen on the floor, it's forgotten about. You know, it becomes a forgotten idea, or it reinforces this idea that we've tried it before and it failed at gate one, or it was rejected at gate two. And oh no, that was a really bad concept because we spent loads of time and money, and when it got to gate three, it was kicked out.
So, this idea of the gates and things like that, let's just explore what you mean by that, because it sounds very much like an idea and it disappears into the ether, and what's sitting behind the scenes is that they've got these decision-making levels. Is that what you mean by gates? And then the second part of my question is that part of the problem, that it does feel like it's disappeared within the ether, so you don't want to generate ideas because you don't believe that they're going to go anywhere?
Exactly that.
Okay.
So yeah, that's exactly the problem, because you do need a decision-making process, and innovation is actually not just one process. Innovation takes place in an entire ecosystem with many, many different activities at different stages, and they require different things. But this funnel concept only covers one small part, just basically the decision part of the process, because not all our ideas are good ideas. So you have to have some criteria by which you will judge ideas. And that's this concept of gates. And I think the stage gate process was invented by IDEO. There's an agency called IDEO. And I believe that they were the ones who came up with the original stage gate process. And it was literally, you know, we generate lots of ideas, and then we decide which ones are good ones and which ones are bad ones. And we drop out the bad ones and we proceed with the good ones. And when we proceed with the good ones, we then validate that there's a market for them. And then we drop out the ones that don't. And by following their process, that's why the process is shaped like a funnel, with the idea that you're whittling down from 100 good ideas will generate, 100 ideas will generate one thing coming out the other end. But the stage gate process is very much implies one way, so things only go through, and it's very binary. When something fails, it fails. There's no chance of it reworking. So at the very end of this series, and in the final episode, I'm going to be giving an alternative metaphor for people to keep in mind that rather encompasses the entire innovation ecosystem and not just this funnel thing. Because the funnel thing, for me personally, creates the wrong mindset in people, because they very definitely think of it's a filtering process, ideas, and they think, well, my idea is just going to be one of 100. And I heard that Bob submitted that idea 6 months ago and it got slapped down at gate 2. So we might as well forget about that. There's no concept of rework. There's no concept of revisiting the ideas that didn't make those gates. And there's also no explanation of where did these ideas come from? We've covered in previous episodes, you know, where to look for inspiration, doing your horizon scanning and scouting, just to be inspired. We've covered the culture and the mindset that people need in order to generate ideas and envision the future. The funnel doesn't explain any of this. It starts with, we've got all these ideas, and it ends with, we've got these products. And in the middle is a whole lot of, you know, we're going to have decision boards that decide. It's a really, really terrible metaphor, because it switches people off and it makes them think of a boring binary process that people follow through. And that's not the way that innovation works, not in my mind and not in my experience.
Yeah, no, I'm not against what you're saying at all. I think it makes a lot of sense. I do come across what I call this practical mindset. And that is a lot of what you're describing, right? Particularly because you mentioned it gets product out the back of it. There is a lot of product manual mindset going on in the world where people just create these kind of funnels. And the practical side of it, I've seen that a lot in marketing. You get the same kinds of funnels. I've seen it within sales and marketing. I've seen it independent on sales. It's like it's there as a funnel, right? And the theory is, the companies that create it, is that it's a way to control process. Yeah. And I get that. But from your point of view, and I'm on the same page as you, I believe, this is what I want to test next, is it's not just that you lose ideas that come into the hopper, come into the top of it, to use a farming analogy, I guess. but it's the problems within the process itself. Because if you believe that your job is to take 10 ideas down to one, you might have 5 great ideas. It's like, is there problems with in each of the steps of it? You see what I mean? Because of the mindset of these decision boards or decision groups or whatever you want to call it.
And we will very much, you just touched on something that we're going to cover in the next episode, and that's to do with measuring the wrong things.
Okay.
In terms of how many do you need to do what? Well, if I need 100 ideas to generate one good product, let me go off and go get 1,000 ideas, because I'll then get 10 good products. That encourages the wrong behavior. And we'll explore that one, because I don't have fantastic answers for that one. What I've got is good questions, but we'll explore that one in the next episode.
Okay. And so if I wanted to kickstart innovation in my organization, do I need a load of technical people, a load of product people? Like, what do I need?
This is another great myth. The number of companies that I meet where their attitude is, oh, we want to hire a whole lot of coders and techies and millennials because we want to become more innovative. So we need innovation people. And so we need these people with a technical background. What a load of rubbish. What they're missing is, as we've covered before, everybody has the ability to be more innovative. A young intern contacted me over LinkedIn. And he said, I've been following your stuff. And I really want to get to the point where I can do what you do. I want to be an innovator. I want to solve problems and help them. Where do I get started? So I said to him, okay, you're an intern. Where are you working at the moment? And he gave me the name of a high street retail store. And he had a 3-month internship. And he was basically doing the, you know, clean up on aisle 3, please. He was doing very manual job of getting out there and restacking shelves and doing shelf cleanups and things like that. So I said to him, okay, just describe me your day. What do you actually do? And he said, well, I go and report into my supervisor, and my supervisor has got a list. Whenever somebody in the store sees something out of place or knocked over or whatever, they go over to the floor manager and they report something. Then the floor manager picks up the phone and he phones the supervisor, and the supervisor writes it down on a list. So I go there and the supervisor says, go and restack this aisle, or there's a mess on that aisle, go and clean it up. And I go and do that, and then I go back and I report back to the supervisor, and he ticks it and he allocates me the next job on the list. So I went, okay, do you use WhatsApp? And he said, yeah, of course. I said, does your supervisor use WhatsApp? He goes, not sure, but I can find out. Don't see why not. So I went, okay, here's a plan. Why don't you create a small WhatsApp group that everybody in the store can join? And anybody who works in the store, when they see something, they can snap a quick pic and send it through to the supervisor straight away. And you can see it at the same time. And you can then just go from job to job to job. And each time you finished it, you snap a pic and say, yay, thumbs up, I've done it. Everybody then knows that the thing that they reported has been sorted. They've got physical evidence of it. There's none of this delays. And they went, wow, hey, that's fantastic. I said, yeah, that's all you've got to do is approach your day and see, where's your pain points? Where are the frustrations? Where are the inefficiencies? It's just a mindset thing. And he started thinking of lots of other things. He got hold of me 2 weeks later and he goes, the company's asked me to come back when I finished my university degree. They said that they want me to come and help them kickstart a whole idea gathering thing because they want to roll out this concept across all their stores. Simple. He wasn't technical at all in any way, shape, or form. Had never worked with a computer system or anything like that in a corporate environment. You don't need that. He didn't need some big experimentation or expensive tech. He used what he had, start where he was. And he went forward and he just suggested to a supervisor, hey, can we try this out for a day? Supervisor said, yeah, let's try it. Why not? You know, I'm sick and tired of writing stuff down all day long. Supervisor's time was cleared up. Staff walking the floors were a lot happier. Everybody could see. He got a huge pat on the back, massive accolade. He was invited back in again afterwards when he had finished his university degree. That's how innovation works.
I mean, the joy of that is the simplicity of it, and also moving away from technical, and we will talk, I want to talk a little bit about software next as well, but moving away from technical, what you've really got is just somebody looking at things and saying, what do people need? I love the fact that you talked about efficiency and just applying some what I would call practical science that says, okay, this is what people currently do, this is how they think, how can we make it simpler? And I often find that particularly the larger the organization, they still do what I call spreadsheet-based savings. It's the Microsoft model. Microsoft still sell to this day based on if you implement Skype for Business, which no offense, but I've never run into anybody, literally the larger the company, that has anything good to say about it. And what I've heard 9 times out of 10, and I'm not over-exaggerating at all, is, yeah, we don't use it. Like, they don't use the phone system because they don't like it and they don't understand it. And it leaves me thinking about, is the world still run based on these spreadsheet-based savings and this idea that technical stuff solves things? And that leaves me on to, finally, to my question. Do we need to implement complicated kind of software systems to create innovation, to run funnels and stuff? Like, what's your view on that?
So this is another one where I think a lot of people get caught up in the hype around technology. You could get a senior manager who goes off to a technology show or maybe to a customer experience event, and somebody will say, our innovation efforts were boosted because we put in this idea management system. And we can get ideas from the whole company. And we got thousands of ideas. And now we're so innovative. And what they believe is that it's the software that made them become more innovative. That's a complete myth. You know, the software doesn't get people to become more innovative. It starts with people. And you need a process of what will happen when you get those ideas. Because here's what often happens with an idea management system. And I've installed a couple. And I've advised and I've coached people. And I've been part of projects to input to put in place idea management systems, electronic suggestion box type idea. And one of the very first projects that I was involved in was where we got a lot of learnings, because we were hell-bent. We need to get ideas from the staff. We need this whole electronic suggestion box idea. That's how we're going to fill up our innovation funnel, because we had a funnel in those days. So we got this great, very expensive software that could manage loads of different ideas, and we put it up and we said to the staff, give us your best ideas on what you think the business should be doing. And within a couple of days, we got over 1,000 ideas. And that was the problem. We got over 1,000 ideas. We hadn't thought through that we need to articulate a specific challenge that we want ideas for.
Right.
So firstly, there was no topic domain. It was just give us your ideas. So the ideas were a vast spread of things from let's put in 3-ply toilet paper in the toilets because it would make it more comfortable for people and increase efficiency. Yeah, that was genuinely one of the ideas. Right through to really complex process efficiency ideas and suggestions. So we hadn't really thought, and we went, wow, we've got to try and get through these and figure out what's a good idea and what's a bad idea. That was the next thing. We hadn't thought through, how are we going to evaluate these ideas? Is it on gut feel? Is it what I believe? Is it what you believe? Do we need some sort of criteria? Are we looking for ideas that save money? If so, how much? Are we looking for ideas that generate new revenue? If so, how much? Are we looking for ideas that increase customer satisfaction and loyalty? If so, how we go? We hadn't thought through a damn thing. With the result that out of the over 1,000 ideas, firstly, we had to switch off accepting any new ideas. So now a whole lot of people that hadn't had a chance to get their ideas put in, they went, what's going on? No ideas here. Yeah, we can't put our ideas. I'm frustrated. And Joe could put his ideas, but Sally now can't put her ideas in. What's going on? So we aggravated a whole section of the staff. And then out of the ideas that we got, we very blatantly and biasedly cherry-picked the ones that we really thought were cool. Just completely the wrong thing to do. Completely the wrong thing to do. We didn't layer it over with, you know, what challenges. We just went, hey, that's cool. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Let's go off and go and do that. So again, we disenfranchised a whole lot of other people. And when we took the time to understand people's behaviors, the right things that we should have been doing around boxing and a challenge and setting a specific time-bound challenge with a specific goal in mind, and maybe targeting a smaller group of people who might be able to get engaged in a better way. When we had worked through all of that and we reopened the idea system and we did it with a very specific focus, nobody wanted to play anymore, because the majority of the staff went, yeah, we gave idea last time. You did nothing with it.
Yeah.
So you have to know what's going to happen, how you're going to approach it, and why you want the ideas in the first place.
I get that a lot. I mean, everything comes back to experience for me, right? Like, there's a lot of UX, user experience, examples and methodology, and some of it I build and some of it I write with algorithms that I create and stuff, right? But the biggest point about it is that I always consider what is the mindset of the people that we're trying to deal with, because once you start doing that, to use your example, you'd probably look at it now differently and say, well, there's different questions we could ask. As you said, you could frame it against the problem that you're trying to resolve, because people will give you exactly what you define to them, like whether you do or you don't. I always make the, like, let's take questioning techniques as an example, right? If I was to say to you, Andrew, what did you eat for breakfast?
Cereal.
So you had cereal, right? And it was a what-based question. So that goes into the conscious mind. It's simple to answer because it is based on memory and a simple instruction, right? If I say, how did you eat that cereal? How did you?
With a spoon.
Okay. Right? So simple enough, right? And I could do this visually. We could say, well, show me, and you walk me through it, right? And it's in Andrew's subconscious. He has to think about the actions that he did. Like, if he was having a banana for breakfast, how did you eat that banana? How did you peel it? Which one did you do first? Did you put sugar on your cereal? All these kind of different things, right? Where it becomes really challenging, and people always miss this as a part, is when you say why. Like, why did you eat cereal for breakfast? It's when you ask a why-based question, you're going into somebody's unconscious, and what do you want them to say? Well, when I was 3.5 years old, I was shown how to eat Cocoa Pops by my dad, so that's what I do every single day. And I feel that Cocoa Pops has defined me and my purpose as an individual eating cereal. You see what I mean? Why questions are really difficult, but it kind of touches that entire experience. Like, people will give you what you want. And I really love that example, Andrew, because normally people can't get any ideas and they can't figure out why. In your example, you got too many ideas and you needed to refine it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I love the fact that you're focusing on the why, because that's very definitely going to be a big part of the next podcast, is going to be the why. It's quite crucial, actually.
Wonderful. Look forward to hearing all about that. You can follow the entire series by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or visit andrewvorster.com. That's andrewvorster.com.